just to be able to walk those grounds and be able to play there is, you know, growing up as a kid in South Africa, watching the Masters at midnight finish, didn't ever think I'd have the opportunity to do that. When the heart rate gets fast and the blood's flowing and your arms, you know, your arms can tense up and that can actually affect your physical swing.
Welcome everybody into the Run the Race podcast. It is Masters Week. It is, as they say, a tradition unlike any other. Definitely a magical place. I've had a chance to go there twice myself on Wednesday practice days right before the tournament years ago. Definitely a bucket list item. I had an awesome time there. It is definitely meet your expectations. Just some of the, you know, the best golfers in the entire world doing something that we can all try to, but can't quite meet that standard. They've got great pimento cheese sandwiches, usually for a couple bucks, and great things on the course. And my guest for today is somebody who was actually just on the course earlier as we record this on Monday. He is a golf head coach for the men's team at Augusta University and director of golf there. He's been there for almost 2 years, and a friend of mine, Stephen Payne. You'll get to hear his accent. He's originally from South Africa. During his first year at the helm at Augusta University, he was named the 2023 Southland Conference Coach of the Year, leading the Jaguars to their first Southland Conference championship with a huge margin, and they went on to the NCAA Auburn Regional. Before that, he was at a place called Point University in West Point, Georgia, where he was head coach. And before that, he was the assistant men's coach at Mississippi State University. So he's been, you know, a lot of different places. And at Point University, they won 23 tournament championships. And in 2020, he led the Skyhawks to a number one national ranking and other different things there. And in terms of his playing career, he was at Columbus State University. I'm here in Columbus, Georgia, just south of Atlanta. He captained the program as a student athlete from 2010 to 2012. And then he was a graduate assistant when the Cougars 2013 team went on to a top 10 ranking. And as I mentioned, he is from Cape Town, South Africa, where he was a member of the junior national team before coming to the United States and earning NCAA all freshman team honors there and graduating with a bachelor's degree in finance and going on to enter his master's degree in business. And more importantly, he is a husband and father. I know his wife, Brittany, well. And he definitely married up. I think he'll agree with that. And he has a son, Liam, and daughters, Adeline and Asher. He's also served as a caddy on the PGA Tour. So we got a lot of things to talk about today. So without further ado, Stephen Payne, thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, you've had a busy career for such a young man. You've done a lot of things on and off the golf course, right?
Yeah, I know. I feel like it's, you can just ask my wife. The last 4 or 5 years has been a bit of a whirlwind, so no, but it's been really good, though.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk about the Masters, obviously, and you're right there in Augusta where all the craziness is happening, and we're going to talk about your golf career and, you know, even including being a caddy on the PGA Tour and coaching athletes there in Augusta right next to where the Masters takes place. But, you know, we talk about faith and fitness on this podcast, and I wanted to start with there with golf and fitness, because there's sometimes a misconception that, like, well, golf, you're just getting in a golf cart and going down and you're swinging a club, you know, 100 times. And do you really have to be in shape? Are there misconceptions about, I know for the competitors, like the guys that you coach, you have to walk. But are there misconceptions about the game of golf that you have to be in shape or not?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that's kind of interesting, I actually had this conversation with someone yesterday, in the 80s, 90s, even early 2000s, when I was playing, you know, a lot of the times golf was kind of the sport where, it pains me to say this, but, like, you know, kids that didn't play football or basketball or baseball, like, they just kind of by default became golfers. And you had a bunch of not massively athletic looking guys playing golf. And the reason the conversation came up, we played with the University of Texas yesterday. The kid was 6'10". And, like, you just, you know, you wouldn't see that previously. And golfers are most certainly a lot more athletic now. If you look at guys on the PGA Tour, you just look at Tiger's new body that he's in, and you know, a guy like Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, really, really big guys, and that's completely changed the way the game has been played. So it is pretty interesting. And then on top of that, you know, at the collegiate level, at least, long days. I mean, Saturday for us was a 36-hole day. So up at 5:30 in the morning, and then the guys, you know, it was a shotgun start at 8:30, and you walk in 36 holes, and you get off the course around about 7 o'clock. So I think on 36-hole days, if you look on your health apps, you're probably doing 25,000 to 30,000 steps. So different kind of fitness when you think to maybe football players or basketball players, but most certainly at the highest level, guys are definitely nowadays in really, really good shape. The top athletes, they're working out 5-6 times a week. And yeah, definitely a lot more athletic looking guy playing golf now. So that's why I'm coaching.
And now, you know, is cardio and weightlifting, are they both, you know, just as important when it comes to golf? Because like you said, it can be an endurance sport in terms of you're out there for 4, 5, 6 hours. Or maybe is weightlifting, is strength becoming more important for the game of golf?
I think a good combination. I think the three areas that are pretty important is like your strength, your mobility, and then your flexibility. Those are three things that they focus on a lot in golf. And then, like I said, the cardio aspect as well. So I think guys are, you may see some guys go a little heavier on the weights. You might be familiar with kind of what Bryson DeChambeau did a couple of years ago, just kind of like drastically changed his body and was just hitting the ball like unbelievable distances. Brooks Koepka is another guy who goes at it pretty hard. But then you get some lanky guys who, you know, real fit and wiry kind of strength, and they also hit the ball a mile. So not one particular body type, but I will say over the past few years, the weights have definitely, I think 10, 20 years ago, like really hardly anyone was lifting weights. And now everybody is doing some form of weights, whether it's strictly just weights or a combination of that and cardio.
And, you know, I know you maybe deal with this with your athletes at Augusta University, but for like an amateur golfer, somebody who likes to go out, you know, once a week, or maybe they go out, you know, every other day and play golf, no matter what age they are, what kind of things would you say for them they need to work on in terms of strengthening? Is it the hips, the glutes? Is it the shoulders? Because, I mean, you're making these kind of, you know, movements that you don't do in normal life when you're on the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things are, you know, some people who are into fitness like to do. I think one is just, you know, especially as we're going into this time of the year now, for the next 6 months, going to have pretty good weather. Just, you know, people go out and walk as opposed to riding. It's not maybe as convenient, but some people who are trying to get some fitness out of golf will do that. And then the other thing is, like I said, I think for your average golfer, the most important thing is probably flexibility, because you're not going to go into the gym and get on some crazy golfing routine if you're just an average Joe. But I think flexibility is one area that's massive, because if you look at the professionals who have the longest lasting careers, it's usually the guys that are really, really flexible. I was just at the Masters today. I watched Vijay Singh in a practice round. He's going to be close to 60 years old, and he's getting the club, you know, past parallel still. The people that you see struggling are the ones who, you know, they looks like they're swinging the club to their waist, and they're just struggling with rotation. So I think all the areas of the body that you mentioned, I think if you, you know, it's just basic stretches you can do at home. If you can be very flexible, it's going to allow you to get into those positions a lot more easily.
And, you know, does, you know, maybe you found this with your own playing career or with the guys that you coach, you know, and maybe this can be for amateur, you know, golfers as well. What kind of injuries, you know, do you most commonly see in golf, and are there ways to prevent that?
Yeah, I mean, back injury is probably the most common injury you see in golf, just because of the, you know, it's an unusual movement, putting a lot of strain on there. Yeah, and I think, like you said, core and glute strength are probably the two most important things when we're talking, you know, like muscle groups where you want to have strength. A lot of people that are weak in those areas, they'll kind of compensate in their golf swing and then put a lot of pressure on your lower back. So if you feel like you're good with the fitness and you're good with the flexibility, the core and the glute strength is going to be really, really important. Takes a lot of pressure off the lower back. Definitely avoid injuries for sure.
And by the way, congrats to your Augusta University men's golf team. We talked about it off mic, but 5th place finish out of 15 teams in the Augusta Haskins Invitational at Forest Hills Golf Club, a team score of 7 under, one of 7 teams under par. And number one was, you know, like you said, a team that my sister went to school at, University of North Carolina. So congratulations. So the guys that were in this tournament, you were saying they got to go to Augusta National today and see the professionals?
Yeah, so we very, very cool time of the year to be in Augusta. You know, you had the Augusta National Women's Amateur last week, which finished on Saturday, with the final round being played at Augusta National. And then our event, as you mentioned, we played at Forest Hills on Saturday, Sunday, had 15 teams from all over the country. As you said, North Carolina, number one team in the country. At Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Illinois. Just a lot of really, really good teams. It's a strong field. And one of the things that really does attract a lot of teams to our event, other than the obvious, is we have a PGA Tour exemption for the individual winner. So the winner of the event got into the 3M Open, which is going to be played in Minnesota this summer. Tobias Johnson won. He's from Mercer University, shot 9 under par. And then the other thing is all 75 contestants, yeah, got to go out to the Masters today. And it was pretty cool walking around the grounds, bumping into players from different teams. Spoke to a couple of coaches who have, Marquette was playing, that they didn't have one kid who's ever been to the Masters before. So they were there when the gates opened, and they're going to stay there till the gates close. So really, really cool experience. And yeah, we're super proud to be able to host that.
That's awesome. Now, a lot of folks have not experienced this, but have you had the chance yourself, maybe numerous times, to play around at Augusta National?
Yeah, we're fortunate in our program that that's one of the things that really helps us on the recruiting trail. Most years we get to go out there in January, February. We get the chance to play Augusta National. So very, very cool experience. I've been out there a handful of times, and yeah, just to be able to walk those grounds and be able to play there is, growing up as a kid in South Africa, watching the Masters at midnight finish, didn't ever think I'd have the opportunity to do that. So feel very blessed and spoiled.
Now, they're saying that this year the tournament will play 7,555 yards. So for for those who maybe have not experienced playing there, compared to you played on tons of courses, I mean, is it extremely challenging? Is it kind of what people is harder than people might expect?
I mean, the biggest challenge is kind of on the greens and around the greens. But as you mentioned, with the yardage over the past few years, just with all the things we talked about earlier, the guys getting stronger, hitting the ball further, technology and whatnot, they've had to add some yards to the course. So now it's actually, I mean, that's incredibly long, and everybody knows Augusta for the the green complexes. So really, really challenging around the greens. I think if your average golfer were to go out there, you would struggle tremendously. Tremendously on the greens for sure.
So if I normally shoot like a 102, I would probably shoot like a 122. Something like that.
Yards with conditions, yeah, if you shot 100, if someone shot 100, they'd probably shoot about 130. It's pretty tough. There was one pro who said that he could, if he played his ball, and let's just say he's, played a good round and shot 70, if you gave him the opportunity to place a ball anywhere on the green on every hole, and then you took a 10 handicapper, he thinks without hitting any shots, just putting from those locations, he thinks he would beat that person. So he's assuming that that person's going to four putt or worse every single green on the golf course. And for most regular golfers, you're trying to two putt and maybe three putt every now and then. So just shows the difficulty of the greens.
Yeah, the short game. I mean, it's a drive for show, putt for dough is what they say, right? Yeah. Some quick hitters when it comes to the Masters, because I know you're invested in and you're going to be watching, from the TV or from wherever you're going to be at. So you got the defending champ, Spaniard Jon Rahm, and that he won his second major championship last year. And so, do you think that he has a I mean, it's only, there's not many people that have repeated. So, do you think that he has a chance, a pretty good shot to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's probably 5 or 10 guys now in golf that if they're playing their best, then there's not many people that can beat them, and he's most certainly one of them. Obviously, with the whole PGA and LIV thing, it's been pretty interesting, because the one great thing about the majors now is it's, one of four times this year where you'll see all those guys together. So pretty neat to see that. And I think there's a lot of anticipation for this year's Masters, because you kind of don't really know. Scottie Scheffler's been playing really well, but he hasn't been competing against those guys. So to see them all together this week is going to be great. And yeah, I mean, if Rahm brings his best stuff, he most certainly could repeat for sure.
Yeah, I mean, 7 appearances, the Masters, Rahm's had a top 10 finish 5 of those times. So it's pretty consistent when it comes to the Masters. And you mentioned Scottie Scheffler. So he has, 2 wins and a runner up in his last 3 starts. And a lot of people, it'd probably be hard to argue he's the best golfer on the planet right now. So do you think that he's, I mean, can live up to those expectations?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big Scottie Scheffler fan. I think the thing that's interesting is last year he had a phenomenal year. He was, number one in multiple categories from ball striking standpoint, but he actually struggled quite a lot on the greens throughout the year. And in this year, he's actually figured his putting out. So, a lot of people are just kind of saying when, he's a dangerous man right now because he's still hitting it as well as he did, putting really well too. And he's got a lot of, like Rahm, he's got a lot of imagination and creativity, which goes a long way at Augusta with, like I said, with the green complexes and having to curve the ball around the corners quite a bit there. And also another side note with Rahm, Spaniards have had quite a lot of success there with Olazabal and Seve winning as well. So it's going to be interesting for sure.
And Rahm's going to try to do something that hasn't been done since 2002, when Tiger Woods won back-to-back Masters. And so that's the thing that a lot of folks are watching. Whether you're maybe a just a an average or just a fly-by-night golf fan, or you're just watching for the majors like the Masters. Tiger's won 5 times, and Jack Nicklaus has 6 green jackets. And so Woods, obviously has been dealing with some injuries off and on for years now. So do you think that, I mean, what can we really as fans expect, you think, from Tiger Woods?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Crazy things happen at Augusta National, I mean, I think when I was kind of growing up, Freddie Couples, he almost won it a couple times in his 50s. Jack won it when he was 46. I think 2019, Tiger must have been 43 or 44 when he won it. So I don't think anyone expected him to win in 2019. The one interesting thing with the Masters is it's the only major that's played on the same course every year. So, the guys like Phil and Freddie and Tiger, like they come there bringing, 20 odd years of experience around the place, and it's less about the physical game and more about like the expertise knowledge. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Fuzzy Zilla might be the only first time winner at the Masters, and there's a reason for that, just kind of knowing those slopes on the greens, knowing how to play the golf course. So while it's probably unlikely, I mean, you never know with Tiger. I mean, I think right now his goal is probably to try and make the cut, would be my guess. But again, you never know. Magical things have happened around there, and maybe he gets the putter rolling. Who knows? See on Sunday.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And one last thing, in terms of asking a question about the Masters, Rory McIlroy, obviously, about, I guess it was 12 years ago, 13 years ago, had the famous collapse on Sunday where he was in the lead and then lost it pretty dramatically. And since then, he's won 4 majors, major championships in golf. Do you think, a lot of folks maybe you're thinking, will he finally get the career slam? Do you think Rory, has it in him? I mean, you think people are going to be picking him to win?
I think Rory will win the Masters at some point. Whether it's this year, I don't know. But I just think it's hard for him because every time he goes there, it's there's a couple of guys who need one more to finish the slam. And it's like every time they go to that event, that's all they talk about, So maybe I'm kind of the belief he'll win it when the talk like kind of tapers off. Maybe people get tired of talking about it here in the next few years. But I just feel like he builds it up so much because it's like it's talked about so much. But the course most certainly suits his game. I mean, I got to think, as talented as he is, at some point he's going to win it. I like Rory as well, so hopefully he's in the mix this week, and it just kind of adds to the event when you have the big names up there, So it would be really cool to see Rory win this weekend. I'm going to call that he does win it at some point. Hopefully, maybe this week.
Well, whenever you decide to give on your coaching career, you make a great analyst like your former coach, Mark Immelman, and maybe you could work with him one of these days.
There we go. Yeah, he's doing a great job.
And also, the weather is supposed to be stormy on Thursday, the opening day of, Masters play, the shots that count. And I know as a player and now as a coach for years now, I mean, how much does the weather really play in terms of rain delays or wind in terms of being able to play on the college level or the pro level?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's everything, right? I was out there today, and the interesting thing with golf, I mean, if you think of a sport like basketball, you're playing on a pretty similar conditions every single time. But golf, it was really firm underfoot there today. I was kind of surprised by that. It's been really warm here lately, haven't had rain. So that means a lot of things. Obviously, the course is going to be playing a lot shorter. The ball's going to be going further. Greens will be a lot firmer too, though, which makes around the greens tougher. But then you have that rain coming in on Thursday, so it not only affects the conditions, but also affects like the play as well, playing in the rain or playing in the wind or playing in the cold. The elements have an effect there. And then also mentally, just like you said, if you're with rain delays and going on and off the course, the year Tiger won, I think they ended up teeing off at like 8 o'clock in the morning off two tees, which is something that's not very usually done at the Masters. So there's a number of different ways that the weather can affect it. And I'm kind of interested to see what happens with the conditions going forward the rest of the week. I think the forecast, other than Thursday, is looking pretty favorable, though. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, our meteorologists here say that after Thursday, whenever the storms roll out, it's going to be beautiful. So I'm sure they can make up some time if they yeah. need to. And you were talking about the mental aspects of the game. We talked earlier about, you know, physical and, you know, being in shape, you know, in terms of the endurance aspect and also, you know, kind of being strong with your core. But what about the mental aspects? I mean, do players, I mean, maybe college or pro, do they use like sports, you know, psychologists, or how important is the mental part of the game compared to the physical?
Yeah, I mean, it's massive. I think especially when you get at the professional level, because or even the collegiate level, like once you get to a certain level, everybody can play like to some degree, right? Like if you go stand on, like I was on the range today at the Masters, and if you didn't know golf and you're watching, they're like every guy physically can hit the ball pretty well. And that's when it becomes very mental, because you're looking for small margins to improve. I think probably out of the guys on tour, I would say at least 80% probably work with someone in some capacity. Collegiate level, quite a high level too. We work with a really actually a good friend of mine. Guy's name's Phil Schomer. Worked with him since my days at Point. He went with me to Mississippi State as well. Now he's fully engaged with our team as well. We do a lot of team workshops, and we do a lot of individual one-on-one sessions as well. Just, you know, I think there's a bit of a misconception when people talk about like sports psychologists. I think historically people would think of, you know, maybe someone's got like a mental block or, you know, putting yips or something. But really what he does, and a lot of these quote unquote psychologists do, is just helping guys, you know, it could be helping with their preparation, helping dealing with expectations, putting them through certain situations that they might deal with so they know how to prepare. Kind of a lot of what we talk about is like military, right? You go through a military training, you hope that you never have to kind of deal with it, but if it does happen, then you're very prepared for that situation. So yeah, big part of the game.
And you, I mean, you can teach your guys at Augusta University, you know, different techniques and how to improve their short game or their drives or their, you know, putting. And it's repetition and practice. But how are you, what do you do like in terms of mentally, in terms of taking the tools that you've learned in your career and kind of dishing it out to them and helping them understand like, you know, what kind of mental space they have to be in?
Well, you're a runner, so you kind of know it's kind of similar, very, very, very mental, some degree. And like I said, we work with this guy, his name's Phil Schomo. He's really great, and he gives the guys a lot of techniques that help. Like one example is, you know, breathing is a massive part of it. Guys, when they get fast, or you like this week, we played in the final pairing of our tournament. On the final round, we played with Texas and North Carolina in the final grouping. And you know, if you're a young guy or someone who hasn't dealt with that kind of pressure before, that can be pretty tricky. So when the heart rate gets fast and the blood's flowing and your arms can tense up and that can actually affect your physical swing. I mean, there's a lot of science and studies on it. So just a basic technique like the 3-6 breathing that we've been taught just really helps just kind of loosen and relax your muscles. And those are the kind of things that he works with on our players that can have a massive effect. You know, it's when you get in those situations, you don't really know what your body's going to do. And having a technique and having a strategy to do something when you get there. I mean, you've run marathons, you kind of know, right? Like there's a massive mental battle towards the middle end of that marathon that you might not have known of the first time you did it. So one, experience, and then two, just kind of having ways to deal with it.
Yeah, it kind of, like you said, it's experience is the best teacher, yeah. Kind of being through that those kind of tense situations. And for you, you know, what is it like, you know, because you were a player at Columbus State University, played growing up in South Africa, had a lot of success. Now to put this other hat on that you've had on for how long have you been coaching now? For, has it been 10 years or roughly? That's more than that, maybe?
2024. Yeah, probably about 10 years. Yeah.
So what's that like in terms of like, you know, how is that maybe a lot different than when you were playing golf?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like you said, obviously the experience is big. You know, as a coach, you kind of also because you're going through, you may go to the same tournament five, 6 years in a row. So you learn a lot of things from those situations. Whereas for that person who's in that situation, it might be the first time they're going through it. So, just to be able to kind of, like you said, wear many different hats. I think our biggest job is just to make sure the guys are as prepared as they can possibly be. And I think having that experience allows you to know how to prepare them and to put them in the best possible situation to excel. So whether that's helping them with the physical part of the game or working side on side with an instructor they might have, or putting them in touch with a sports psychologist, or helping them prepare for a certain type of golf course or conditions, there's many factors to the game of golf. And I think that's why a lot of people find it so fascinating and get hooked on it, or get so frustrated as well. But just having that experience really has helped coaching up players for sure.
Does it was it more frustrating as a player, or is it harder as a coach because it's kind of out of your control somewhat?
Well, that is true, but I think the part that's probably makes it not as frustrating is these guys are a lot better than I am and a lot better than I ever was. So it's not like I'm sitting here thinking I could have done that myself, because for the most part, these guys are really, really good. So I really love the coaching aspect of it. Just building the relationships with the guys, and you're with a kid for 4 years. So you're able to kind of really invest in someone both on and off the golf course. And it's, some of the kids I've coached are kids or men now that I'm really close with and good friends.
And with that, obviously you're talking about on and off the course, and I know for you and your family, faith in God is so important. And so does that play a role at all in terms of what you guys do on and off the golf course, or is that something that it's kind of a separate thing from what you're able to do on your job? Because I know, like with Point University, it was a Christian school, now it's kind of maybe a different situation.
Yeah, I mean, there is slight differences working in like a public school system and a Christian school, but I think for me, the most important part is just kind of living by example, right? And like I said, you build these relationships with these guys and you invest in them. And I had a friend kind of once explain it to me. He works in the ministry, and it's just like, you live your life out the best you can, obviously from a faith standpoint, but you don't need to be, bashing the Bible down their throat. And if they, 18 to 22 is a very vulnerable time in life, and they are going to go through stuff in that time. Some kids go through a lot worse stuff, but if they know that you have a firm foundation in Christ and who you are, like when the what hits the fan, like they're going to come to you and ask you questions, and they're going to ask you, how are you able to stay calm during the situation? So how did you deal with this in college? And that's when I think you have the opportunity to minister to someone and to really, shine into their life. So, like I said, I think 18 to 22 is a really vulnerable stage in someone's life. And, statistics kind of show like who someone is by the age of 22, a lot of times really determines who they're going to be for the rest of their life. And that's, you named Mark Immelman earlier. Mark was a massive, played a massive role in my life as a coach. He kind of showed me how to live as a man. He's a Christian man as well. And taught me the way. And that's really how I got into coaching, and why I got into coaching was to kind of combine those two passions of mine, my faith and obviously my love for the game of golf. And it's just so rewarding. Just love what I do and being able to share my faith through what I do.
Yeah. And Mark being South African as well. And so now with that, do you usually root for the South Africans that are playing in the Masters, or do you have certain guys that are like, okay, I really want him to win it or to be in, that top 10?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I was a kid, I was a huge Tiger guy. So I think I was always just rooting for Tiger. And then obviously whenever there's a South African guy in the mix, the live thing kind of mixed it up for the South Africans, because a bunch of them went over there, and the whole deal with the world ranking points, them not getting points. Now, a lot of those guys are not eligible to play in the majors. So I think we have an amateur, Christo Lumprecht, who plays at Georgia Tech. He won the British Am. So he gets in. And then we have another guy, Eric Van Rooyen, and I think that might be it. So we're a little slim on that side. And in terms of other guys, I mean, the guy I really, really love is, I'm a big Scottie Scheffler fan, just a really outspoken on his faith. And I think just for me as a, a person of faith, just to watch him like in interviews and the way he handles things and his perspective on life and perspective on the game is just so phenomenal. And it's something I try to do as a coach, and many times I fall up, fall short, just kind of getting caught up in results and whatnot. But just to hear a guy like that, who's the number one golfer in the world, and talk the way he does after losing golf tournaments and whatnot, it's very impressive. So I'm pulling for Scotty this week.
Yeah. And with, like you said, with your team, Augusta University being right there next to Augusta National and being exposed to some of the professional athletes, especially this week, I mean, does that teach them a lot too, and see how these guys handle their business on and off the golf course?
Yeah, no doubt. I'm actually at my office now, came back after watching the Masters, and two of my guys were on the range practicing, and they said that exactly what you said. They sat on the range for 3 hours and watched the guys hitting. And they're just saying, like, the tempo looks so smooth and they're never off balance. And they said the first thing they felt like doing when they walked out the gates was to come practice and hit some balls. So that's pretty funny that you mentioned that.
It makes you feel good as a coach, right?
On an off day to see you guys practicing at 4 or 5 in the afternoon is after watching golf all day. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure after this interview, and you'll hopefully get to go home, to your family. Now with your kids, are they into golf at all? How old is Liam now?
My oldest son, Liam's 7, massive baseball guy. So he's in baseball. My theory is, I think with all sports, I think kids should just play as many sports as possible, in my opinion. Nowadays, you kind of see some kids just like, they just do one sport from a very young age. I'm not a believer in that. And then when we hosted this tournament this week, my family came out to watch a little bit, and then they'll go hit balls in the range. So, and then at home, he'll be shooting basketball. And then my daughter is 6, Addie. She's very artsy, and then she also loves her dance and gymnastics. And then we've got a 2-year-old, Asher. He's just a wrecking ball. So we'll see what he gets older.
Now I know Brittany she likes to run herself off and on, yep. But does she play golf with you much, or is she kind of maybe just rides in the golf cart with you perhaps on a round, or?
Yeah, she early on she kind of tried a little bit, but she wasn't kind of her thing, and she's more into cycling and running. That's kind of her deal. So she kind of lets the golf be my thing. But I'll be honest, I don't really play much golf anymore. When you work at something 6 days a week, when you get an off day, it's like, you just kind of want to spend some time with the family. So our involvement with golf is kind of when they come out and watch the team, or if they come out and visit me at work, then the kids will kind of run around in the facility and maybe hit some balls. That's about it.
Yeah. What is that like? Because a lot of folks, maybe that are amateur golfers, they're golfing several times a week, and they're spending their weekends golfing. And the same thing can be said for things like hunting or fishing or running. So how do you balance that? Kind of like, this is how much time I really need to spend at work and on the golf course. This is how I need to spend, time at home with them.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing it's good, I guess, in a way, it can also be tough, is like when we're busy, we're really busy. But then when we're not, like, we kind of have a similar cycle as like teachers. So here in a couple months, we'll be off. We still have recruiting to do and whatnot, but from like the middle end of May till early August, really, the university students aren't here. So we'll do some camps, we'll do some recruiting, but I'm very flexible with my schedule during that time. And then also kind of towards the middle end of November, and then all of December and a bit of January, same thing. So it's like when you get your family time, you get it, you get a lot of it. And then when the travel season hits, and it gets pretty, pretty busy as well. So it juggling that can be tough, but I think just making sure you have that balance and having a good partner like Brittany has been very helpful, just especially with 3 young kids.
Yeah. And kind of looking back a little bit, when did you first start playing golf? Was it a pretty young age, maybe as young as Liam is?
No, I started when I was 10. I played everything, and then I started playing golf when I was 10, and played golf and everything until I was about 14. And then I decided to just focus strictly on golf. We played some different sports over there. I played cricket, rugby, and soccer. Those were my sports. And then threw golf in the mix at 10. And then, when I got to high school, when everybody else was just like, in these physical sports a lot bigger, and my high school wasn't great at those sports, I decided to take a sport that was an individual one, and I could kind of focus on developing on my own.
And what would you say, from 10 years old, playing all the way until you are in your mid-20s or later, what's anything stick out to you in terms of a highlight of your career golf as a player, something that really you kind of treasure, that time, that moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say two things. My first one was, being able to represent my country. I played for the South African under national squad. You get a green blazer is what we get represented with over there. So that was obviously a massive highlight for me and a big deal. And that was part of what kind of helped me to come over here and play college golf. And then in college, in my freshman year, actually, we were Columbus State was Division II, but we had a really, really good team. Mark was at the time was all in on coaching, and we were the number one team in the country. And we won five or six events that year. We went to nationals in Washington State, just outside of Seattle, and we lost the national championship by three shots. So it was pretty gut wrenching. But I finished fifth that week, and that helped me be named All American my freshman year. And I remember the night before the final round, one of the seniors telling me, like, as a freshman, like, you kind of think, oh, this is just normal, but he tried to like hammer home to us, like, this might be the only chance. And I kind of didn't really believe him, and sadly that was kind of the best chance we ever had of winning one. So never got that close again, but I still look back, on that team and that year and that week very fondly.
So you have a green jacket yourself. What, a green blazer, as they call it, right?
Yep, exactly. So doesn't hold quite the same weight as the one around here, but I actually joked with a friend once, thought about kind of wearing it on property, see what would happen. Probably get thrown out, but.
Now, I read that you, I don't know the exact specifics of it, but that you were a caddy on the PGA Tour for a time?
Yeah, when I was at Point, small college athletics, you kind of, I was a swing instructor during that time as well, because, you're making a whole bunch of money. So I would kind of do some swing instruction on the weekends. I gave you a few lessons, I think I remember back in the day. And then
you did, yeah. Well, it wasn't your fault. It didn't help because I didn't probably play enough, and I wanted to go fast and hit the ball far. So that's, not a good recipe.
And then during that period, just kind of had the opportunity to caddy for a friend of mine. His name was Jason Allred. Probably caddying about, 10 to 12 events for him. Caddied for him in a US Open at Chambers Bay, which was pretty cool. And then multiple PGA Tour events and some Korn Ferry Tour events. That was also very eye-opening and something that I think has helped me a lot as a coach, for sure.
And as a former player and now coach, just down the road, what's it like for you, today, and you're going to go again this week, I guess, during a practice round, to see, the best golfers in the world kind of, prepare for this biggest tournament in the world. What's it like for you kind of watching? I mean, are you a fan, or are you thinking more as a coach when you're out there?
That's a good question. I think that, one, you're probably trying to learn, like, look for some ideas of, practice rounds and golf are kind of interesting for sure. So you're just trying to learn. I mean, I watch a lot of golf on TV, and you're trying to see how guys maybe play certain shots or prepare for certain things. And then, but at the same time, also, try to be a fan and enjoy it. And like I said, the Masters, there's just something about it, right? Back nine on Sunday, it's a pretty magical place. So even though I've been around the game for a while and seen quite a lot of things, I still get really, really excited for this week.
And, a lot of folks, it's on their bucket list, whether they're just a sports fan, maybe they don't even like golf a ton, but the Masters is that kind of that echelon. What would you say to folks about, what about it is different? Because I mean, I know you played there and you've been there quite a bit, but what makes the Masters and Augusta National different than maybe, other sporting events?
I think it's just the uniqueness of it. I actually had the chance to take my father-in-law the last couple of years, and he's kind of a social golfer, and I don't think he kind of knew what to expect. And last year he was just like blown away by it. He was super excited to go back again this year. And, no cell phones on property. There's a lot of just kind of like small little things around their rules and things that kind of make it just very unique. For the longest time, they didn't televise the front nine on TV, and just small things like that, which, make it just so different. So when people go there, even living here in Augusta, you drive down Washington Road every single day, but like people be peeking their heads, like trying to look through the hedges. So you like, it's just that mystery of it. I think that just makes it so, so amazing. So I think other sporting events are just kind of out there and in your face. The Masters is just like, there's just kind of like this mysteriousness. Like every year they bring out something new, they might make a change to the golf course, but they never tell anyone about it. and they have this big press release on Wednesday where they'll, you know, talk about new things they might be doing in the community or changes they made to the golf course or, you know, ways to grow the game. So I think that's probably it. It's like, you know, you get in there the first time and you just see the, you know, the grass is so green and the flowers are just so vibrant and you so many fans out there. And yeah, it's just, it's hard to explain. You got to go to experience it. You know, you would know what I'm talking about. You said you've been a couple of times.
Yeah, and there's also the Masters store. Oftentimes, that may be the only place you can buy some of the Masters exactly. gear for that year. And you know, some I mentioned earlier, some of this. What do you prefer in terms of eating there? Do you egg salad, pimento cheese? What are some of the classic Stephen Payne snacks at the Masters?
I'm actually a little different. I love their barbecue. I don't know why. It's really really good. And so I had two barbecue sandwiches today. That's kind of become my go-to thing. So. Barbecue sandwich. I know a lot of people like the pimento cheese, but that was my go-to.
And you're in just as good shape now as your golfers, your coach, right?
Ooh, I don't know about that, but I try hold them to a higher standard. But you and I used to go on a few runs back there. Maybe I have to come back to Columbus. You can whip me back into shape a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen, whenever you're down for a half marathon or a marathon, you know, I mean, I'll run with you. So you know, we'll commit to each other if you just let me know. All right.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you, Stephen Payne. We appreciate it, and have fun at the Masters this week, and Godspeed to your team, Augusta University. Sounds like you're doing a great job with them, and going to continue to win some of these championships as well in tournaments.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure catching up with you and look forward to hopefully seeing you soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Cheers. Bye.
Certainly great to catch up and hear from Stephen Payne. You know, love his South African accent. He is doing some great things with his team. He loves the game of golf and loves God. And I found an article by a man named Jay Revel called God, Golf, and Billy Graham. Billy Graham being one of the most influential pastors, Pentecostal men in the history of the world and of America. Of course, being a man of God and also of golf, he had a pretty good handicap. Called to God at an early age, and also, you know, he loved golf for the most of the time that he was alive as well. He was drawn to the game, he says, because he found that a golf course was a divine place of reflection and personal growth. Saying that, quote, a golf course is an island of peace in a world often full of confusion and turmoil. And so he was a student in Florida. So there you play a lot of golf like my dad did when he grew up in Pensacola, played a lot of golf, liked to hit the ball long. And in this article, it talks about how golf, much like prayer with God, can provide that break, that respite from the troubles in life. And, only God could lead man to think up a game like golf, right? This sporting pursuit that takes us through these amazing vistas and nature that God has provided us. And, you also have to believe that God has a plan. I mean, we win some, we lose some. You know, golf can be such a frustrating sport, but it's one that you are up against yourself. And making those mistakes, making those amazing shots at times that keep you coming back. I have not had the chance to play golf much. I used to play about, once or three times a month, pretty consistently for years. But since I've started running, especially long distance the last, 8 or 9 years, I've really haven't found the time to play golf. And playing, nine holes can cost you $20 to $30. Playing 18 can take you 4 or 5 hours. So it's an investment of time and your money. And but I'd like to get back out there and do it, a great chance to have fellowship. But you probably want to walk, like Stephen said, to get exercise while you're golfing instead of just hopping on the golf cart. So I definitely recommend that. But looking forward to watching the Masters. Going to be rooting for Tiger Woods, Scottie Scheffler, some of the American guys, and just want it to be, kind of close and dramatic and fun. There's going to be some storms rolling into Augusta, I think, on Thursday. This podcast episode coming out maybe just a day before the guys tee off, day and a half before they tee off. So hope you got some good insight from Stephen about what you'll be seeing on TV the end of this week. And as we do on all our podcast episodes, this one being episode, I think 198, or 99, something like that. We close out in prayer. Dear God, just thank you for this time together. Thank you for sports like golf and putting that here on earth for us to enjoy or to be humbled by. And Lord God, we just pray that we can use sports and our talents and our gifts and our passions to glorify you, to lift you up higher, and to walk out that faith like Stephen was talking about, not just shoving the Bible down people's throats, as some may call it, but to really live out that life of faith and use those opportunities and those doors you open, those windows you open, to be able to speak into people's lives and to show our faith on and off the course, whatever that may be, with our job, with our sport, with our home, wherever. And I just thank you, Lord, for this opportunity to talk about you, to talk about golf. And we just love you so much. In your name we pray. Amen. Thank you so much for listening to Run the Race. Make sure, go on that Apple Podcast app, that little purple thing on your iPhone, and go to Run the Race and just go scroll down to the bottom real quick, and you'll see an opportunity to write a quick review, a couple sentences, and I'd love to hear from you and what you think about this podcast. Give it 5 stars if you think it's worthy of that. Let other people know about it. Hashtag Run the Race. And I think I'm going to be going out and doing a little running right now after I record this this tag out here. So I hope you guys have a great rest of the week, and God bless.